Breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you'll miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be. Dream a little dream of me. Stars fading, but I linger on, dear, still craving your kiss. I'm longing to linger till dawn, dear, just saying this. Sweet dreams till sunbeams find you. Sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you. But in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me. Dream a little dream of me. Sunbeams find you, sweet dreams that leave all worries behind you, but in your dreams, whatever they be, dream a little dream of me.
At last. Hi, everybody. It's been too long. And thank you, Ozzie Nelson. That was Ricky's dad on the very first recording of that song, a Brunswick 78 recorded February 16th, 1931. And speaking of dreaming a little dream, I'm Michael Wilde, and this is Mostly Singles. The Something Old, Something New, Something Bootleg, Something Blue edition on WGXC Tonight, 90.7 FM, bringing you what I think of as a time machine, a little bit of old and new, and also things you might not have heard. And if you have, maybe you'll love to hear again, like this one from Chris Montez.
Service I can render. Tell the one who loves you only. I can be so warm and tender. Call me. Don't be afraid, you can call me. Maybe it's late, but just call me. Tell me and I'll be around. When it seems your friends desert you, there's somebody thinking.
Thank you. with the life down low, and things are progressing mighty slow. Too much delay, the fellow keeps saying, come on over here, from way over there, there's nobody near, and room in this chair for two. That's a good girl. You never will miss a sweet little smack, so give me a kiss, and I'll give it back to you. That's a good girl. I've got a present here to show you. Before I start to Romeo you, it's only a ring. I bought it today. Don't mean a thing unless you will say I do. That's a good girl. Now, sweet little girlie tells her beau that she won't say yes, but then she won't say no, and things are progressing mighty slow. The moments are flying, and fellow keeps sighing, come on over here, from way over there, there's nobody near, and room in this chair for two. That's a good girl. You never will miss a sweet little smack, so give me a kiss, come on now, and I'll give it back to you. You will. Good. That's a good girl. I've got a present here to show you. Before I start to Romeo you, it's only a ring. I bought it today, but it don't mean a thing unless you will say I do. You will. That's a good girl. And although it is true our lips haven't met, I'm sure when they do, I'm going to get a thrill. That's a good girl. And my cheek you must pat as real lovers would. And when you do that, oh gosh, it feels good. That's a good girl. Now if I kiss you, don't you cry, dear. I'll promise you'll enjoy it by and by, dear. Now pucker your lips and give me a kiss. Now here's what I mean. It goes something like this. You like it? You do? That's a good girl.
Oh gosh, it feels good. That was Whisperin' Jack Smith singing That's a Good Girl. Victor 78, recorded October 1st, 1926, a song by Irving Berlin. Jack Smith, the whispering baritone from the golden age of songwriting, deftly accompanying himself with the keyboard. Here he is on the rise, having started out recording in late 1925, enjoying great popularity for the next 4 years, until things out there started to change. What you're hearing here is the birth of crooning from a pioneer making innovative use of new microphone technology that afforded a kind of intimacy never before heard. Let it be known, too, that his voice also filled theaters. He sang in many different styles and started out as a Tin Pan Alley song plugger, giving private performances to vocalists who might want to adopt the new songs. His recordings, though, are among the first of many songs that would become standards. I've been playing a lot of Whisperin' Jack Smith, and I haven't really told what happened to him. It's like this. Alcohol got the better of him by 1931, the year he started cutting titles for Plaza, a company that issued budget labels. Jack fell from the prestigious Victor to the dime store Banner label. He recorded for Decca in 1940 in a failed comeback and continued to play in nightclubs or roadside restaurants, not presented as any kind of star. He sang and played piano to audiences indifferent to or unaware of his earlier fame. He died in New York City on May 13, 1950, and was buried next to his mother, Anna Schmidt, at St. Raymond's Cemetery in the Bronx in an unmarked grave, a place I wandered among one day when my father was having a procedure up in in that area of New York, and I had all this time to kill, and I found myself wandering around up there. I didn't know that Whispering Jack, at the time, I didn't know that he was up there, so I wouldn't have found him anyway, because his grave is unmarked. Anyway, that was what I call him, the great Jack Smith, and I've been playing a lot of them. Before that, Palawo Nigi Joko. And I'm sure I didn't say that right. That was Essie Rogi on his label Rogi Phone from 1977, recorded in 1975 from the album African Lady West African High Life Music. So-called palm wine music for listening pleasure while enjoying palm wine. Born in 1926 in Sierra Leone, West Africa, Suleiman Ernest Rogers went from tailor to professional musician in the 1960s, singing in four languages. In 1965, he formed a band called the Morning Stars, then started traveling, playing elementary and high schools in California, then, having received many distinguished awards, moved to London in the late 80s, returning to his home country in 1993 to play a series of benefit concerts for people displaced by political turmoil. His recordings, the last of which was in 1994, have since become classics of world music. He died at age 68 that year, Essie Rogi. And we started out with, well, we didn't start out. We started out the set with Call Me. That was Chris Montez on the A&M label from 1965, a Tony Hatch composition first recorded by Petula Clark, a single I almost played, but for Chris Montez, whose lift and spirit is exactly what I wanted to start things off. And if you're just joining us, this is Mostly Singles. I'm Michael Wilde. This is the Something New, Something Bootlegged, Something Old, Something New, Something Bootlegged, Something Blue edition. And if you heard that little bing, I'm working on a new system here, so I haven't got all the kinks out yet. So we're just going to keep going in this homemade edition of Mostly Singles with a bonus track from Television.
little dream of tears, Penelope says to the man, don't ask me. He likes her in a green dress, but she says life is not black and
I walk along the city streets you used to walk along with me, and every
every step I take recalls how much in love we used to be. Oh, how can I forget you when there is always something there to remind me? Always something there to remind me. I was born to love you, and I will never be free. You'll always be a part of me. Oh, 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 oh. When shadows fall, I pass the small cafe where we would dance at night. And I can't help recalling how it felt to kiss and reattack. Oh, how can I forget you when there is always something there to remind me? Always something there to remind me. I was born to love you, and I will never be free. You'll always be a part of me. Whoa, 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 whoa. Should find you miss the sweet and tender love we used to share. Just come back to the places where we used to go, and I'll be there. Oh, how can I forget you when there is always something there to remind me? Always something there to remind me. Love you, and I will never be free. You'll always be a part of me. Never love another, baby. I never will forget you, baby.
Always something there to remind me. That was Lou Johnson on the Big Hill label from 1964. First recording of this Burt Bacharach held David Beauty, here produced, arranged, and conducted by Burt himself. Johnson was the vocalist who introduced both this and the Bacharach David tune Reach Out For Me, as well as an early version of their Kentucky Bluebird, a.k.a. Message to Michael, all before Dionne Warwick and the others turned them into best-selling hits. First, there was Lou. And it always surprises me when I hear these swingy, soft Burt Bacharach tunes and see the early pub date, this one 1964. I always associate him with early 70s, the Close to You period. And, you know, he had that sound, you know, as early as the early 60s. So he was ahead of his time. You know, this isn't rock and roll, which was, it's soft rock, but before anybody was calling it that. And before that, Penelope, that was Jay Clarkson on the Flying Nun label from 1987, from the eponymous EP, world-class New Zealand and a true blue musician. This is one of those story albums whose voice is a character at the heart of each song. And each song is complete in itself. And together, they make an arc, which is a kind of, for Jay, it was a dramatic forerunner of Spur from 2015, which I've played, I think, most of. I think if you spread across the mostly single shows, I probably have played every cut on that record, but I might have left one off. I've staggered them though, because it's a surprise record, and I didn't want to spoil the story. I didn't want to give it away. It's such a great album, and this one in its own way is great too. It's different, but it has some very beautiful songwriting on it. And this is just one. I hope to be bringing more from the album called Jay Clarkson in future shows. And we started out with Untitled Instrumental. It was a bonus track from the re-release of Marquee Moon, a television record from 1977. The re-release is dated September 2003. And when I introduced the song, I forgot to say, listen for the broken string. And because there's a story associated with this song. Richard Lloyd, this is his quote. "This was a song entitled O Mio Amore. I broke a string in the middle and the band went on, which we had discussed. I play all the leads and solo on this track. I tried putting another string on, but as anyone can hear, it sounded like S asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. So all that's left is Tom. Rhythm guitar, Billy Fika drums, and Fred Smith bass, and me on leads until the string broke." You know, and I've heard this now like maybe four times, and I can hear the string break, and then he tries to play with what's left, and the notes are all wrong, and then he just stops. So I'm sorry I didn't, you know, pre-point that out, but it's pretty cool. I mean, I liked the way it sounds when he was playing the funny notes. There's another very funny story, and this is more of the quote from Richard Lloyd. "There is another very funny story connected with this, but it will have to wait until I write my memoirs." So there here he is teasing us. Well, we get to hear this lovely extra, new to my ears after all these years. So I want to set up this next song before I just leap into it. It's called In Spite of All the Dangers, Danger, singular. One of the first songs recorded by the Quarrymen in July 1958. I think it was July 14th, not sure. And if I ever thought in a million years I'd ever get to hear the Quarrymen, then composed of John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, pianist John Lowe, and drummer Colin Hanton, or Colin, not sure, all in their teens, I'd have thought it was a dream. I mean, this is a miracle of the age we live in, that time machine I was talking about. You know, the Quarrymen? Really? Here they are.
In spite of all the danger, in spite of all that may be, I do anything for you, anything you want me to. For you.
I said, take it easy, baby. I worked all day and my feet feel just like lead. You got shirt tail flying all over the place and the sweat falling out of my head. She said,
hey, bossa nova, baby, keep on working, boy, this ain't no time to quit.
She said, go, bossa nova, baby, keep on dancing, I'm about to have myself a fit.
Bossa nova, bossa nova.
Hey, little mama, let's sit down, have a drink and dig the band. She said, drink you think, oh, fiddle and dick, I can dance with my drink in my hand. She said,
hey, bossa nova, baby, keep on working, boy, this ain't no time to drink.
She said, go, bossa nova, baby, keep on dancing, like I ain't got time to think.
Bossa nova, bossa nova. Hey, bossa nova, baby, keep on working, boy, I ain't got time for that.
She said, go, bossa nova, baby, keep on dancing, or I'll find myself another cat.
Bossa nova, bossa nova. Bossa nova, bossa nova.
Thank you.
No More Love. That was Eddie Duchin and his orchestra with vocal by Lou Sherwood. A 78 RPM Victor, number 24447. Recorded October 25th, 1933 in New York City. These are the years where he could be heard at the casino in Central Park, just inside and southwest of Inventor's Gate at 5th Avenue and 72nd Street, where today's Summer Stage concerts are held. Yes, there used to be a structure there, originally designed in 1864 it was designed as a dining place for women visiting the park without male escorts. It was an unadorned cottage, then renovated and reimagined in 1929 as a restaurant nightclub with a swanky interior for the hi-hats and swells, catering to their expensive tastes. This is where Clam's Casino came from. Porterhouse steak cost $1, mushrooms 25 cents extra, a fortune. To give you an idea, the interior was modernized to accommodate 600 guests, with a main dining hall that featured two enormous crystal chandeliers sparkling off black mirrors, stained glass windows, an inlaid tulip design covering walls and ceiling, and Eddie Duchin at his magnificent grand with orchestra playing what you just heard. And what I was poking around the internet trying to dig up information about the casino, I had to go into different tabs to really get a hold of this this story. I found some anecdotes from other musicians about Eddie Duchin in those days, and I found something very surprising is that he was a self-taught piano player. I mean, Eddie Duchin was a pharmacist by his original profession was a pharmacist, and he went into music largely self-taught, and apparently he played all kinds of wrong notes and made mistakes, and the musicians would be endlessly amused at his screwing up when he played. And I have so many of his records, and I listen to them. I have these sessions and, you know, all this stuff from the early 30s, and I was very surprised to know that he was making mistakes. I couldn't hear them, but the musicians were, you know, they would just laugh. So to me, he's this pianistic giant, but, you know, to them he was sort of like this I don't know what, I can't speak for them, but I think it's hilarious that they were all sitting there, you know, giggling while he was doing this amazing stuff on the piano. When I say amazing, what I'm talking about specifically are octaves. Octaves are very difficult to play in a light glissando manner, and he was the king of that. I mean, if you really listen closely, what he's doing just sounds effervescent and bubbly and light, but it's notoriously difficult to just to slide your hands on ascending and descending octaves as if it was a butterfly. There's that ding again. I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to turn you off. There. That's the end of that. Okay. Before that, Bossa Nova Baby. That was Tippy and the Clovers on the Tiger label from 1962. First recording of this Lieber Stoller gem, recorded October 19th, 1962. 3 months before the Elvis hit version, a Lieber and Stoller production of a splinter group formed after the breakup of the original Clovers R&B group, featuring lead singer Roosevelt Tippy Hubbard and conducted by Alan Lorber. Piece of trivia there. And then we started out with something I never thought I'd heard in a zillion years, The Quarrymen. That was the Beatles before they were the Beatles, coming out of Liverpool from 1958, in spite of all the danger. The song was written by Paul and George, and is the only song to credit those two alone. It was recorded at Percy Phillips' home studio in Liverpool, and along with their cover of Buddy Holly's That'll Be the Day in the same session, these are the second recordings of what would become the Beatles. Only one copy of these recordings was made, and each band member kept the acetate disc for a week. The pianist on this track, John Duff Lowe, was the last to have it, keeping it for nearly 25 years. And here's what he has to say about this remastered version. I found this quote from the guy who played on this song. This is his quote. "This is just superb and better than Anthology 1, which was remastered by EMI. The original recording runs for 4 minutes, and as it's now regarded as the Beatles' holy grail, I think it was a pity that Paul shortened it. As the original pianist on the track, I can tell you that it is re-remastered from the original, albeit shortened anthology version," end quote. And according to people who know about these things, I'm not counting myself among them. I mean, this is what I was able to garner from people who follow this stuff and do all their work, you know, their homework. The editing on Anthology was done because of groove damage to the original shellac record. So it wasn't Paul's fault that it was shortened. It was because the original was damaged. And I found this newspaper clipping that I want to read it because I think it's great. It's so interesting. It's called, the name of the clipping is called Dance Club and House Cellars. And I'll just read it to you. This is the clipping. "Four young men making a name for themselves in the world of skiffle and, quote, pop music are the Quarrymen, who played for many teenagers to dance at the opening of West Derby's Casbah Club on Saturday evening. The club where teenagers can meet their friends, dance, and drink coffee has been opened in the cellars of a house in Hayman's Green, West Derby. The Quarrymen, complete with a varied repertoire and their electric guitars, will play at the club each Saturday in the future. They are John Lennon, spelled L-E-N-N-A-N, 251 Menlove Avenue, Woolton, Paul McCartney, 20 Forthland Road, Allerton, George Harrison, 25 Upton Greens, Speak, and Kenny Brown, 148 Storrington Avenue, Norris Green." Well, Kenny, you had your shot. And I think the Casbah Club, I think that was started by Pete Best's mother. And I'm pretty sure that Pete got his gig with the Beatles because he had a venue for the band to play in. But this is a guess. I read, there's a book called Beatle! Exclamation point, and it's the Pete Best story. It's his own recounting of his days as one of the Beatles. And he goes into the Casbah Club and his mom and the whole thing. It's, I think that's what this news clipping is referring to. So this is right in the very beginning of the Beatles. Before they were the Beatles, they had a lot of different names. And there's some debate about whether they were still the Quarrymen by July 1958. Again, this is like something for people who are so steeped in Beatles lore. I mean, if I'm making a mistake here, forgive me. This is what I've been able to get off the internet. And that song is credited to the Quarrymen. So amazing, right? Okay, here we go in our next set which, well, I'll just let it speak for itself.
Most everybody wants to drive a car.
But how many people really should?
It's for sure, not maybe, that a grown-up baby doesn't belong behind the wheel. And the boy who blows his top every time he has to stop can't drive on an even keel. Silly so-and-so who thinks he has to show how loud his tire squeals. He's just about as bad as the dull-witted lad who thinks every other driver is a heel.
When a hothead gets behind the wheel, he can be pretty dangerous.
And that's exactly why studies are being made on the behavior patterns of drivers.
It's for sure, not maybe, that a grown-up baby doesn't belong behind the wheel. And the boy who blows his top every time he has to stop can't drive on an even keel. The silly so-and-so who thinks he has to show how loud his tires squeal. Just about as bad as a tow-witted lad who thinks every other driver is a heel. He thinks every other driver is a heel. He thinks every other driver is a
heel. Watch you, pussycat! Whoa, whoa, whoa! you pussycat. Whoa, 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 whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and powder your cute little pussycat nose. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat nose. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, you're so thrilling and I'm so willing to care for you. So go and make up your big little pussycat eyes. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat eyes. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. Pussycat, pussycat, you're delicious. And if my wishes can all come true, I'll soon be kissing your sweet little pussycat lips. Pussycat, pussycat, I love you. Yes, I do. You and your pussycat lips. You and your pussycat eyes. You and your pussycat nose.
You're listening to WGXC ACRA, Catskill and Hudson, 90.7 FM. Me too. Ho, ho, ha, ha. Paul Whiteman and his orchestra with a vocal chorus on the Victor label from 1926, a year that's getting good representation tonight. The year that my father was born. You know, it's really interesting to hear the music of one's parents' birth. It makes you realize what is a generation. 1926, holy camoli. That was a Harry Woods, Charles Tobias, and Al Sherman song, the first recording of it, which has a lot of covers. I have the sheet music of Me Too with the Siamese twins Violet and Daisy Hilton that you can see posted on my Facebook page, which they used to sing in vaudeville in the 1920s when they were stars. You know, I'd give my eye teeth for a recording of that. No luck. I've actually spent time imagining it, just how they'd sing it. Daisy on the melody, Violet's dusky harmony. About the arrangement, I don't know. The photo on the sheet music shows Violet with what looks like a soprano sax and Daisy next to a piano, but it's a stock publicity picture that they used to book their act. I don't know that when singing Me Too, they switched back and forth between harmonizing and playing these instruments. It seems kind of far-fetched, but who knows? These Siamese twins were capable of anything. I'm sorry we never got to see them perform in Freaks, the 1932 Todd Browning film. It was all backstage intrigue and romance. We never get to see them do their act. You could see them singing numbers which I've played on other shows in this movie called Chained for Life from the early 50s, which was a sort of a cri de coeur from the twins about their hardships, their trials and tribulations trying to get married. What was happening with them during their during the 30s and 40s, and I'm not sure exactly which years these laws took place, but they would try to get married and the state would quickly change its laws to prevent them from marrying. And so they would go to a different state and the same thing would happen. So this was the original same-sex marriage problem. You know, the people who are different are always going to have trouble with that. Before that, What's New Pussycat? Tom Jones and the Decca label from 1965. Hashtag not me. You know, I've been wanting to play this up-tempo, un-PC Burt Bacharach hit for a long time now, but could never make it fit. Here with Me Too and the grown-up baby, it finds its place at last. Speaking of which, grown-up baby, Carly Simon and the First Team, a 19-year-old Carly, on the Columbia Special Products label from 1965. From the album Chevrolet Sings of Safe Driving in You. I've played this one before. I think it goes well with Liar, which was the Sex Pistols, which is the Sex Pistols, and the Barclay label from 1977 from the seminal Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols, an album that gets tamer and more melodic with each passing day. It was a great act, and with an audience I'm really glad I was never in those days. And something was being unleashed. A level of rage that we didn't have over on the Bowery in those downtown clubs. You know, when I was doing it, it was more about fun. At least that's how I remember it. The Sex Pistols were PO'd all the time. And so were the Clash and a lot of those English bands. I think the Sex Pistols were, I mean, this is my take on that. I think they were kind of envious of the Dolls. Because there's that song, New York, where he's like making all of these nasty remarks about David Johansen and mocking him. And it just sounds like sour grapes to me because Johnny Rotten credits himself ridiculously as inventing the entire genre. And there were people beat him to the punch. I mean, sartorially and musically, which is to take nothing away from Johnny as a avant, you know, he was right out there, cutting edge, nothing like him. One of the best front men I've ever seen, I've ever heard. I've seen him perform. I mean, he's amazing. He's great. But he credits himself with the whole shebang and everything that before and came after him. He points to himself, and he says outrageous things, which is perfect. He's a hilarious person and a wonderful interview. That was the Sex Pistols, and that's about as political as I'm going to get on Mostly Singles. In case you're joining me tonight, right now, this is the Something Old, Something New, Something Bootleg, Something Blue edition. At long last, finally, after a hiatus due to technical difficulties, I hope I've ironed them out. I hope this is coming through nice and clear. And so now that I've wrapped up the outraged segment of the show, I'm going to go into the sad.
Ever seen a blind man cross the road, trying to make the other side? never seen a young girl growing old, trying to make herself a bride. So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you of the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy? I was a young man, and all I thought I had to do was smile. You are still a young girl, and you bought everything in style. Listen, but don't you think you're your granddad had to sweat so you could buy? Sing a song of sixpence for your sake, and take a bottle full of rye. Four and 20 blackbirds in a cake, and bake them all in a pie. They told me you missed school today, so what I suggest you just throw them all away. The handbags and the glad rags that your poor old granddad had to stop to buy. So I suggest you just throw them all away. The handbags and the glad rags that your poor old granddad had to sweat to buy.
Joe Sullivan, My Little Pride and Joy of Brunswick 78, recorded August 8th, 1935. And I have the late, great Rich Connerty to thank for that one. You know, I really miss that guy. He had a show for 42 or 43 years. I think it was 42 years. Every Sunday night, it was a four-hour show. And he just played music from the 1920s and 1930s, sometimes the aughts, sometimes from the 1890s. They're cylinders, but he really specialized in the music from the 20s and 30s, and he was a genuine, bona fide scholar of the period. And he wanted me to help him with a book. He was going to write a book about all of this, and you know, he got sick, and he was well into it, but it was a project that never came to pass. He did put out 12 CDs with notes, and his scholarship shines in the notes. And so this record that we just heard came from one of those CDs. This was a record from his collection. He had thousands of 78s. He lived here in Hudson on, what was it? I can't remember the street anymore. Wasn't the one next, is it Columbia Street? Anyway, he lived on Fifth Street, and he had all of his records on this wall, and they were all in order, so he could just reach over. He would roll his chair over and just pull out any record at his fingertips. He knew exactly where it was. Very impressive. He would put together 60 songs per show, which is an amazing feat. What a loss, you know. I mean, there's nobody like that. There's nobody that has that kind of, well, there's like three people who know as much as he did about this stuff. So I'm going to read to you from Rich Connerty's notes, because there's no way I could, you know, I don't have this at my fingertips. This is the quote. Joe Sullivan was a favorite of the Crosby Boys. He was part of Bing's record and broadcast backing with the Jimmy Greer and Georgie Stoll bands, later on Decca Sessions with Victor Young and Eddie Condon. Tuberculosis kept Sullivan from being a founding member of Bob Crosby's orchestra, but he was there for part of 1939 and a 1945 Bob Katz reunion. That's two words, Bob and Katz. My Little Pride and Joy is a Sullivan original recorded in Los Angeles at the same session as his Little Rock Getaway. That's the name of a song. It must have been a favorite since he played it the rest of his life. End quote. So I promised you some Joe Sullivan on last month's show, and here he is. I think it was now 2 months ago. But it was their first recording show, and I played Billie Holiday's first record called "Your Mother's Son-in-Law." But the title is confusing, and she sang the correct lyric. It was "My Mother's Son-in-Law," and but the title of the song is "Your Mother's Son-in-Law," and there's some confusion about who the piano player was, and one of the options for the credit was Joe Sullivan. And I said I was going to play some Joe, and so here he is, My Little Pride and Joy. And before that, Handbags and Glad Rags, Rod Stewart on the Mercury label from 1972. Composer Mike Dabo, lead singer of Manfred Mann, originally gave the song to Chris Farlow in 1967, not a hit. This one, though, has a unique arrangement featuring that plaintive oboe written by Dabo at the recording session at the request of Rod Stewart. That's Dabo on piano, who's playing adds so much. You can almost hear him composing, you know? I imagine a dry songwriter's voice gently talk singing the lyric while he's working it out at the keyboard. But this is pure fantasy. I think songs come willy-nilly. I heard Hoagy Carmichael's son talking about his father once. It was some radio show, and I caught it. And he was discussing how Hoagy always kept some paper and a stubby pencil in his shirt pocket. And they would go for, and he would go for long drives, and sometimes he'd take his kid with him. And, you know, he'd just be lost in thought and then suddenly pull off to the shoulder and then get out of the car and write something down. He would take the piece of paper out of his pocket and bend over on the hood of the sedan or whatever car he was driving, and then he would write the song down. Otherwise, he'd forget it. And I think some of the greatest songs in the canon were written that way. This trope of the composer at the keyboard using the mechanism of the keys and the instrument itself to arrive at his ideas is a myth born from the movies. Some of them spawned by Hoagy himself. I'm thinking of To Have and Have Not, where you see him noodling around, toothpick in his mouth, when Lauren Bacall saunters over and starts humming the melody. But it's an unfinished song with no lyric yet, and we're to understand that he was composing it right there, stuck for the mo. By the end of the movie, it's the soundtrack. It's an automatic assumption that this is the way Hoagy Carmichael wrote songs, except that it isn't true. And we started out, we segued into sad with Theme from Midnight Cowboy. That was Toots Thielemans on the UA label from 1969 from the Indelible Motion Picture Score, music of John Barry. This is definitely something blue, and I hope this sad little set carried you away. And speaking of anxiety and spiking levels of which, you know, I was writing to a friend about this. I don't want to speak for anybody else but myself, but I can't shake this feeling that we're all going through this. I'll be just dealing with this kind of spiking anxiety level. It could come at any point during the day. And so what I do about it is I'll take care of it by doing whatever it is I need to do. And then later on, I'll be walking through a room or going to get a glass of water or something. And then all at once, I feel deflated. It's just this sort of like the bottom falls out of the tub feeling. So then what I do is I talk to myself about everything I have to be grateful for. But it helps a lot. But there's a going around in circles feeling to it. You know, this is sort of, this thing just starts and goes round and round. And I was thinking, like, what I do now is, like, I go outside for some calm me down, and there all around me is an infinity of beauty. Thank you. That was From Way Out to Way Under, The Shadows of Night, K-N-I-G-H-T, Night, on the Team label from 1969. The B-side. The A-side is Shake, an American rock band from the suburbs of Chicago, formed in 1964, self-described as, quote, the Stones, Animals, and Yardbirds taking the Chicago blues and giving it an English interpretation, end quote. This is the second generation of the group, which had shed all but one of its original members by 67. The one left standing was vocalist Jim Sons. It's S-O-H-N-S. Sons. Who got together new members and moved to New York, signing with Buddha Records, who promptly steered them away from British power rock in favor of the 1910 Fruit Gum Company and Ohio Express. That year, 1969, was the release of this single on Buddha's short-lived subsidiary Team Records, Shake, and this B-side, From Way Out to Way Under, were in fact recorded by Sons and a group of studio musicians on the understanding that a reassembled band under Sons would record the follow-up album. That LP, Shadows of Night, K-N-I-G-H-T, is regarded now as a recording oddity, an attempt to mix punk and bubblegum. No, punk and bubblegum. It's like putting Mentos into a Big Boy of Diet Coke. That's the Shadows of Night. And I think they got their name from a high school hockey team. I think they were called the Knights. But it's been so long since I wrote the notes to this show that, it's becoming a dim memory. Before that, Red Magma. Drum interlude, Rodney Holmes from 2020, brand new from the upcoming album Axiom. What can I say about this incredible drummer other than that he's my old close friend? I mean, to sing his praise is ridiculous. You know, that probably goes for everyone else we're hearing tonight, but still, this is something new in the something old, something, what is the name of my show again? Oh yeah, Something Old, Something New, Something Bootleg, Something Blue. This is the something new that I promised, and I'm betting you haven't heard anything like it. That's a bet. The whole record is, I mean, everything coming out of Rodney's studio is just as fine as it can be. So he takes his time. You can go online and listen to other cuts from his work on this. And I'm sure that when the record comes out, I'm going to be playing more from it. Before that, Caravan. That was Barney Biggard, B-I-G-A-R-D, and his Jazzopaters, or Jazzopaters. Fathers of Jazz, Jazzopaters. I don't know. That was on the Variety label from 1936. First recording of the song. A lot of firsts tonight. A kind of carryover from the show from, the last time I was on the air, I guess 2 months ago. In the spirit of carrying along. This one, recorded in Hollywood on December 19th, 1936, has the composer Juan Tizol on trombone and co-creator Duke Ellington on piano. Ellington sometimes formed smaller recording groups from within his orchestra and released the 78s under the name of one of the players. Here, it's session band leader Barney Biggard, clarinet, and his Jazzopaters, or Jazzopaters, including Cootie Williams on trumpet, Harry Carney, baritone sax, Billy Taylor, double bass, and Sonny Greer on drums. This debut was recorded 5 months before Ellington did his own treatment for the Master label. And if you look this up, there are more than 350 recorded versions. Though you might, if it seems familiar, this song Caravan, it featured in the plot of that. It was a recent movie called Whiplash about a drummer, or this kid who's being tortured by his drum teacher. It's a pretty good song, but I mean movie. But anyone who studies drums, they laugh at this movie. But I thought, because it's unrealistic and movie like. But as far as movies go, I liked it a lot, and this song was a big part of the plot. And we opened with Blue Tango. That was Bill Black's combo on the High label from 1960, original version, with a keyboard solo that sounds like one of my Zoom meetings. That doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot. I mean, it sounds like a bunch of buzzy interruptions, right before I get frozen out of the meeting. Bill Black's original treatment of the famous Leroy Anderson composition, here with Memphis Rockabillies. And the sax player is Marty Willis. I just thought I'd throw that in. You're listening to Mostly Singles on Michael Wilde, finally. Hoping this gets to you. This newest edition. We're coming around the corner to the last 15 minutes or so of the show, and we're going to keep going with a bootleg. Here are the Cramps.
Here's one you all know. It's called Lewis Lewis.
Let's go.
Dizzy Fingers, that was Jan August on the Mercury label from 1950. Here, sounding like Liberace playing with the Cramps. Jan August is the guy who played the Ernie Kovacs theme music, which if you're a fan is incredibly hard to track down. This is because of a typo on the original EP record sleeve from 1950, calling what's properly titled Oriental Blues, that's the Ernie Kovacs theme, Oriental Bells incorrectly, and nobody fixed the typo. You know, I don't even know if it was ever caught. So the music is nearly impossible to find. There it is, though, on that EP, self-titled Jan August on the Mercury label, along with this one, Dizzy Fingers. And this is how error gets rooted in history, among other things. And before that, nothing says bootlegs like the Cramps. Here they are, the original lineup, Lux, Brian, Nick, and Ivy, live in London, April 19th, 1980, with Louie Louie. That was a Saturday night, played at the Last Supper special exorcism night. And they played that night with the Barracudas and the Feelies at a place called The Venue. One of Brian Gregory's very last gigs, he was weeks away from stealing all their equipment and hightailing it out west, where he lived in some kind of psychedelic commune in the desert, I think. This is one of two people in my life who gave me the evil eye, and I'm not kidding. I may have told this story before, but I was 16 at the time, and if you've ever been given the evil eye, you never forget it. You know, I got it from Brian Gregory and one other person. This Louie Louie is taken from a 7-inch EP bootleg. The Cramps, their legacy lives in the hearts of all who saw them. This is Michael Wilde, the end of the show of Mostly Singles, the Something Old, Something New, Something Bootleg, Something Blue, coming up at 10 p.m. Battlefield Earth with Dan Seward. Mostly Singles is produced for Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM in the Hudson Valley in New York State. And we're going out with the one and only Wendy Carlos, music pioneer, here on the Moog synthesizer from 1968. Thank you.
Thank you.